Welcome to Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. It's great to have your company. The Great Recession is purportedly over, but as a nation, we're still calculating the fallout. It's a safe bet to say, however, that most people were hit pretty hard. But some people were hit harder than others. For example, families with children saw 72% of their accumulated financial assets disappear, even accounting for the equity in their homes. This obviously has had many short-term effects, like foreclosures and lost savings, but it will also have terrible long-term consequences, particularly the loss of wealth and an increase in debt for those families. And unfortunately, these two factors tend to affect future generations of particular populations disproportionately. UWM professor of social welfare policy David Pate says debt has become a modern-day shackle for many families with children, but more so for African Americans. He says half of all black families in which the mother has less than a high school diploma live in debt. In contrast, white women who work between the ages of 36 and 49 have on average $42,600 in wealth compared to a mere $5 for women of color. Those statistics led Pate to wonder just how bad is the racial wealth gap in Milwaukee and across the country. To get some insight, he turned to Anne E. Price, director of the Closing the Racial Wealth Gap Initiative at the Insight Center for Community Economic Development in Oakland, California. Their conversation is the first of a new regular Lake Effect segment on the intersection of race, gender, and class that we're calling Real Talk with David Pate. Pate tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce more about what he wanted to explore in this inaugural edition.
As someone who's done extensive research in the city of Milwaukee, I have to say I've observed different access to wealth and also how location makes a big difference. Milwaukee has had the distinction of being the most segregated city in the country. When you have segregation like you have in this particular city, you have populations of people who are very stratified in ways that their levels of income are very low. They're not really able to really move out of this location because they don't have a lot of resources that allow them to do that. But also because when you're looking at communities and you want communities to be strong, the issues that I see confronted in Milwaukee is that there's not a whole lot of infrastructure that's been put into place to enable people to move in certain places and also to be able to uplift themselves and their children. Also because of the same fact that we have an educational system that is struggling, it causes a number of problems for people who live here. And so for me, I think that this particular topic is important because it's important for us to be able to have a conversation, and I really think a simple conversation on why is this happening? Why does it continue to happen? Is it a racialized issue? Is it an economic issue? Is it an issue of access to employment, access to education? Or is it a generational issue? And so I think for Milwaukee, which has been a city that had significant amount of manufacturing companies that have moved, but also was a way for people to move into a middle class, white, black, Latino, those aren't here anymore. And so for me, this is a really important topic to bring up. And also because of a recent article that came out in the New York Times this week that looked at the idea of location and whether or not you're in a certain level of income, what does that really all mean? And that's kind of where I wanted to go with this discussion today, is really to look at how do those two things make a difference.
Now, obviously, this isn't limited to Milwaukee, and so you've brought in a national expert for us to speak with. First, I want you to introduce Anne Price to us.
Sure. Anne is someone who has spent over at least 20 years of work in a wide range of areas, including child welfare, welfare reform, workforce development, community development, and higher education. She currently is the director of the Closing the Wealth Gap program or initiative at the Insight Center for Community Economic Development in Oakland, California. And the Insight Center is a national research, consulting, and legal organization dedicated to building economic health in vulnerable communities. And I really would say that outside of this very formal introduction, that Anne is someone who I've known for in a close way over the last 3 years with a variety of work that we've been doing in public and presentations we've done nationally around this whole issue of looking at opportunities and looking at ways to advance themselves from where they are.
Well, Anne Price, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I want to have you comment on what David was talking about that's going on here in Milwaukee and put it in that national context for us. Is what's happening here similar to across the country? I mean, are we seeing a growing wealth gap, if you will? Maybe you can even define what that is, the idea of this wealth gap.
I'd be glad to. Thank you for having me. I'm actually a native of Milwaukee, so it's good to actually have this conversation. You know, we've been looking at this issue for a number of years, looking at the growing disparity of wealth by race and by class, and see that, of course, this isn't just an issue in Milwaukee. It's a national issue that has profound implications for our nation's future. And that's why we think it's so important for us to be able to talk about the issue of wealth and wealth inequality. And when I'm talking about wealth, I really mean how people are able to pass down opportunities to the next generation. And basically, how people build wealth is by opportunities to own land, to own homes, to build up savings in some cases, to have a diverse portfolio, and being able to then pass that down to the next generation. We think about how people are able to do that, and we can go back to our nation's history and see that a lot of opportunities were actually provided to folks through some of the policies that our nation put in place to help, to give people what we call starter kits to build wealth over time. And what we're really seeing is that for many families, these opportunities are eroding, and I think people really feel it when they think about their children's future and think about what's available for them.
Well, Anne, when you saw the article in the New York Times this week, and it talked about this issue of location and people in the bottom fifth quintile and what that means, and some of the things you just said now about how historically there's this issues around the wealth gap, what were some of your initial thoughts? I have to admit, I was a little taken by the fact that that could be that people are somewhat not able to move out and they're stuck in a place. But do you believe that's true, or is there something that you would disagree with that, or how are you? What is your perception of that?
Well, I think that, you know, what we're seeing is so counter to our own kind of American narrative and our American values. You know, in this nation, we really believe that you shouldn't be locked into place just because of the family that you're born into. That shouldn't be a predeterminant of your future opportunities. And what we're really seeing is that in this country, that the ability to move beyond your station of birth, to be able to be born into a poor family and rise and accumulate wealth, is diminishing. And when we look at where the United States is compared to other similar nations, European nations, that we're really falling behind the world on this issue. One of the things I think that this study is really instructive and really helping us think through what factors influence people's ability to be able to move up. But I think for us to think that we could possibly have somewhat of a caste system in this country is just counter to what we believe is possible. This study really talks about some of the factors that you named, David, that are kind of cementing in place people's inability to actually make progress.
Well, what are some of those factors?
Some people are born into a place where they have debt already. One of the things that research will say to you is that you can go where the job is, and because you will have the resources to get you there. And so if you go to where the job is, you'll do better, and people tend to do better. But from what this article was saying is that that's not as easy as it sounds. And for some people, it's not even realistic, because then you're going there, but do you have a place to live? Do you have a network that will enable you to be comfortable? Do you have any of the resources that people will need when they start a new job? To where do I get my hair cut? I mean, that's a simple thing. It may sound like a joke, but it's a big deal when you have to look at your grooming and how do you take care of yourself. So I'm not trying to be flip in saying that, but I think there's certain things that people need that makes it harder to move. And also just your comfort level. Are you comfortable in certain parts of the country due to your race? Due to your gender, and what can make you be able to move to a place where you're going to be more able to take care of yourself? And I don't know, Anne, do you have any other things that you would add to that?
Yeah, I would first say, you know, a lot of times when we enter these discussions, people focus on people's choices and that perhaps people can't make the right choices, they don't know how to make the right choices, and it's really thinking about their own personal responsibility. But there are a couple of things to think about here, and I would say that the two things that we focus on, one is really not what people do, but actually the kind of barriers that get in the way of people's ability to be really who they can be, take risks, to open a business, or retire with dignity, to live out their dream. And that's kind of what we always hope for our children. And when those barriers get in the way, despite people's greatest efforts, despite playing by the rules, then we have to take a hard look at the fact that we are actually have in place the systems that are not working for most Americans. We also want to look at rules and policies that actually advantage some people while leaving others out, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally.
I want to ask you about that, Anne, because before you said something that I thought was very provocative. You said that, you know, it very well may be that we have a caste system in this country. And I want to know, are we putting in place policies that are perpetuating a kind of caste system? And how are we dividing people into different categories?
Well, I think that there are some policies that are actually working to do that, and some of them really go back several decades, and that's why it's sometimes hard for people to see or they think that some of these issues have been addressed, but they're still working to disadvantage certain groups. A clear example of that is the home mortgage interest that you can deduct if you're a homeowner. And basically, our housing policy sets aside $500 billion that goes largely, 70%, to those households who already have homes in neighborhoods with housing with high equity, people with two homes, and very few families that have very, very modest homes or lower income get any benefit at all from that policy. Yet we continue to spend that $500 billion each year. We need to take a hard look at those types of policies because in this instance, it is certainly advantaging some that already are advantaged, and not helping those other homeowners. So we're kind of separating these into kind of two separate classes. You know, when we really have looked at our own data, and we've seen that for households with children under 18, during this last recession, they've lost almost 72% of their wealth. That's all families. That's quite troubling because although families with younger children tend to have less wealth, they build it over their lifetime. But when you're talking about those that have very little wealth, losing a great deal of that wealth, you have to think, what does that mean for their children? And these kinds of policies that are in play actually exacerbate what we're seeing as wealth inequality in this country.
So I want to bring up then the elephant in the room here. David, where does race play into this caste system? Is it a caste system based on race, or is it really just economics?
Well, I think that because home ownership is such a big deal in this country for people to accumulate generally most wealth, in the 30s there were policies that were purposely put in place that did not allow people who were black or people of color to access loans, home ownership loans. So therefore, they start out in a place where they don't have access. So when you look at some of the historical things that have happened in this country, that gets to be problematic because most people have their wealth in their home. That's their, what they're living in, their savings account, as you will hear people say. So I do think there is an issue of race here. We need to have a discussion about, based on some of the policies that have been in place and the access that people have, are certain people locked into poverty? Because there's such a high rate of poverty for those who are black and brown, does that mean that many of those children, when we say get a mentor or we say work hard in school, I think people should work hard in school. I think education is a very good way of getting out of the place where you're at. But I do think there are some things in place that make it still very hard for people to move beyond where they are because we don't provide the same access and opportunities.
And are those the barriers that you were talking about before, that it doesn't maybe matter how hard you work or what kind of decisions you make in your life, that there are these kinds of barriers that will prevent you from being able to get ahead?
Yes, certainly so. And I'm going to piggyback on what David just talked about, just in terms of even the housing crisis that we're still experiencing. You know, the predominant narrative was people just made bad choices. If they bought homes they couldn't afford, and that's why they lost their home. And people fundamentally still believe that, even though that really is not the case in many instances, in most instances. But what we really saw, particularly in black communities, was because of these past policies that actually redlined families into neighborhoods because they could not move into neighborhoods where whites lived, and frankly, whites could not move into neighborhoods where blacks lived. These mortgages were peddled in these neighborhoods, and because they were so concentrated, they had a very devastating impact. And when we've looked at the data, it wasn't income. And it wasn't even the fact that these families had, they were credit worthy. Some of these families had very high credit ratings and could have gotten a standard loan, but were not even offered that loan. They were offered a loan which, of course, blew up in their faces, and many people have lost their homes or their homes are underwater. So that's an instance in which it really wasn't about income. It was really about race. So we have to take a closer look at some of these policies and some of them that reflect our history. You know, I think one area that also is of a concern for almost all communities now is the cost of higher education and the concern that families have that they will not either be able to educate their children or the fact that their children are graduating with, you know, high levels of debt that really hurt their ability to make choices for the jobs that they really want because they have to pay off the debt, limit their ability to move to certain places. This is not the hope and dreams that we have for our young people and even for older people going back to college who are trying to change their lives and get new jobs. So these are things that we have to look at very closely because they're having a devastating impact on many communities.
You talked before about this idea that people have been able throughout American history to build their wealth because of opportunities that have been extended to them, whether it's because of, you know, policies that have been put in place or the opportunity to go after a reasonably affordable education. Do these opportunities just not exist anymore, or do they just not exist for certain groups of people? And again, I'm just going to put it out there, for certain races of people here in the States.
I think that what we're seeing is that, you know, even for example, if you think about high-achieving students who are low-income, that there's a real issue of those students being able to get into prestigious universities and graduate, despite the fact that they're stellar students, for a number of reasons. And so I think that there's certainly, you know, when we look at both class and race, the opportunities are diminishing for a large number, a large share of American families.
And I agree with you also, Anne, because even for those students who are high achieving, low income by race, the New York Times article was about the fact that so many of those students are still not even being told of the minimal amount of opportunities that are there. And I think it goes to whether or not we acknowledge the strength and the agencies of many of these students and their families. Because even on a personal note, I have to say that I have had to be more proactive with many students of color in the high schools that my kids have gone to, because their counselors, even though they were well-meaning, did not even think that the students could go to a Northwestern or a Harvard or a University of Chicago. We need to really increase resources to increase opportunities for parents and people to know how to do it. And people say, oh, they're always out there, but they're not really out there because we don't value that particular student always. And that's a whole different discussion, so we shouldn't go into that. But I do think opportunity is a big issue here for the purpose of this discussion today, because I just really was intrigued by the fact that location has a major factor on your socioeconomic status and your ability to rise up to a different position in life. And I really have appreciated the conversation and really would like to have more of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we're really seeing a number of trends that kind of converge on themselves. I mean, if you think about how people actually pass on wealth, and for many families of color, it's not through inheritance. It's not that someone leaves them $30,000. It's small donation, so to speak. Someone saying, hey, I can't pay my kid's tuition that goes to this parochial school. I need $1,000. And someone in their family providing those kind of small amounts of money that help people survive and be able to build a little something. And so when you think about young people of color coming out of college who tend to have much higher debt levels than whites, those are the folks that family members are relying on to get into good jobs and to help support parents or brothers and sisters. And so we have to think about how different groups actually accumulate wealth and how that's being affected by certain policies and structures.
Well, obviously, we haven't been able to go into everything in this conversation. We haven't even gotten into, you know, the effectiveness or lack thereof of policies like affirmative action, things like that, in terms of providing opportunities, whether or not it does that. And again, another elephant in the room there, but hopefully we'll be able to have this conversation again in the future. Anne Price, thank you so much for joining us. David Pate, thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Okay.
David Pate is an associate professor at the Helen Bader School of Social Welfare at UWM, and he's the founder of the Center for Family Policy and Practice. He's also Lake Effect's newest contributor, leading our Real Talk conversations. He introduced us to Anne E. Price from the Closing the Racial Wealth Gap Initiative at the Insight Center in California. They spoke with Stephanie Lecce. The conversation will continue next month, but if you have questions or comments for Pate, you can email them to lakeeffect@uwm.edu or contact us via Facebook or Twitter. A Milwaukee small business celebrates 30 years of making guitars sound great. We'll meet guitar whisperer Denny Rowan next when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.